All right. Hello, everybody. I am so glad to be here, and I'm so glad you are tuned in. Happy Friday, and welcome to the Friday edition of American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM.
I thought we'd never get here.
I know. It was a heck of a week getting here, boy.
Oh,
but
boy.
Here we are. What a relief.
This we made it.
Talk about happy hour. I am your host, Tom Ryan. Very
Shut
happy to
up,
be here.
Baby.
With me, of course, my lovely wife, co-host Heidi Morales Ryan. And if ever I was in the mood to hear some Louis Armstrong music, it's today, after a very difficult week. Today, we actually have part 13 of our dedication to the entire career of Louis Armstrong. We pick up covering the pre-war era from 1938 to about 1940, just before America gets involved in the Second World War. And I hope you've been tuning in to hear the other shows that we've been covering up until this point. We're going to start with a song today that was actually recorded in January of 1938. It's called Jubilee. And from the liner notes of the CD box that I've got here, I'd like to read what they say about this track to kind of set it up. It's kind of cool. Dick Sudhalter was the author of the definitive Hoagy Carmichael biography called Stardust Melody. He was also a trumpet player. And he wrote that, quote, "This song, Jubilee, has never been played or sung better. The wisdom, balance, and vision of Lewis's two choruses places them almost beyond musical analysis. Placement of phrases, a tip of the finger's knowledge of when to hold back and not play, understanding of those moments when one long note will do the expressive work of many short ones." He also uses the apt phrase, quote, "untrammeled joy" in his description of what unquestionably is among the greatest of Louis Armstrong recordings. Here is Jubilee.
Jubilee, come and join the Jubilee. Gather on the run, sitting in the sun, have a little fun. Oh, Jubilee, come and join the Jubilee. Listen to the band swinging in the land. Everybody stand, watch you sing with a zip and zing. Watch the blues go bing, make the rafters ring. Up to heaven, Jubilee, carnival of joy. Mr. Gloom won't be about. Music always knocks him out. Sing a song, you can shout and join the Jubilee.
Mackerel.
Just how superhuman is this man, right? It's incredible. That is a track that warrants multiple listenings, like his earlier stuff that he did with the Hot Fives and the Hot Sevens, because there's
It's so awesome, though. The quality of that recording is, I mean, you can just hear how clear his playing is.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just such a great thing to hear. I mean, around this time, It's really kind of sad because it was around this point already where the critics were beginning to moan.
They were turning on him.
Yeah. And, you know, little by little, his critical acceptance began to wane. And in retrospect, it seems so sad and so incredible because Lewis obviously had, obviously, by bringing jazz to the world and then eventually having the whole thing turn into swing, Lewis was pretty much the leader of the entire movement. And here is swing at its peak. And yet the critics were kind of like saying, well, you know, how come he's not doing what he used to do?
No. America's jazz ambassador.
Right, right. The music scene isn't what it used to be, so of course Lewis is going to change. There's one thing I wanted to bring up about, I just want to make some minor corrections that I had, thinking about things that I had said on earlier shows, and they're very little. Very small, but they're just worth mentioning because I think it needs to be clarified. I think it was last week we had played Lewis doing a Hawaiian song.
Uh-huh.
And on it, I had mentioned that the accompaniment was a pedal steel guitar. That's technically not right.
What was it?
Because it's Hawaiian steel guitar, which is a little bit different. I think technically you might call it a slat key. And it certainly was an influence on what eventually would become pedal steel. But if you're a guitar aficionado, you'd probably be able to catch me on that. So after I said it, I realized, oop, I probably shouldn't have called it a pedal steel. It's a Hawaiian steel guitar.
Yeah, okay, take your foot out of your mouth now.
So that's that. There was one other point, too, that I had mentioned when Joe Glaser became Lewis's manager.
Yes.
That when Lewis came back to America and they signed up, and all of a sudden it seems like Lewis's problems with his managers seemed to somehow vanish, like Joe Glaser just suddenly made the mobs go away. And what I forgot to mention was that in the interim, Prohibition ended. So the mobs kind of just went away on their own. I mean, without something to criminalize, the mobs basically were disempowered. So by the time that Lewis was with Joe Glaser, it wasn't like Joe Glaser single-handedly fended off the mob for Lewis.
Uh-huh.
What had happened is when Lewis was gone in Europe, by the time he came back, Prohibition had run its course. America didn't have to worry about this. So the criminalization that was brought on by Prohibition had vanished. So Glaser had it a little bit easier to help Lewis with that situation. I just wanted to clarify that.
I think we should go back to Prohibition.
Well, we do have marijuana prohibition in a sense. We're there, so you could draw all the parallels you want to. But I don't want to get into politics.
Yeah, the parties were so much more fun back then, right? With the bathtub gin.
I'm sure, but it was very expensive. Very expensive. Let's hear one more track from Lewis. Around January 13th was the recording date for this, 1938 as well. Louis Armstrong and his orchestra performing "I Double Dare You."
Double dare you to lend me your ear. Take off your high hat and let's get friendly. Don't be a scared cat. Say, what do you care? Can't you take a dare? I double dare you to kiss me and then. I double dare you to kiss me again. And if that look in your eyes mean what I'm thinking of, I double dare you to fall in love with me, hot mama. I double dare you. Mm-hmm.
just an example of the predictable genius that was Louis Armstrong around this time. In fact, I think it was so predictable that had something to do with why there was some critical backlash, because they had come to expect it. And Louis gave it to them continuously, over and over again. I mean, he never disappointed. So I think people took it for granted, quite honestly. Those two tracks were recorded back to back. One recorded January 12th, and the next track, I Double Dare You, was recorded the very next day, January 13th. So it's not like he got tired.
He was keeping busy.
It's just incredible, right? Well, our next track, this is such a coincidence that I can hardly believe it, that this is coming up right now, at this point in time, 2 days before the Super Bowl. With
who
the New Orleans Saints.
Who dat, baby?
About to come up. And it's just incredible to have the New Orleans Saints for the very first time in the Super Bowl. And here I am about to play a version of When the Saints Go Marching In by Louis Armstrong and his orchestra. Now, I guarantee you that I am not pulling any strings or playing with the chronology of what I am doing to have this happen. Every single thing we've been playing by Louis, all 13 shows, I have been strictly chronological. And the fact is, this is exactly, happens to be the very next track.
Book.
Whether they were in the Super Bowl or not, I'd be playing this song right now. So that's amazing to me. What's also really amazing, and you might not have known this about the song. I mean, Heidi, you lived in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
You thought that this song was more or less just a song about the football team.
Yeah, that's how I mean, you know. That's what I always thought. Oh, since I was 4 years old, that's what I would sing.
They took it, they usurped it, and it became theirs, and you'd sing it about the football team, and that was it. The fact of the matter is, it's where the football team got their name from the song.
Yes.
And this was originally a church.
Well, it's a Catholic city. I mean, it's a Catholic state, really.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. They got parishes, not counties.
Right.
And this song was originally a gospel song, a church choir song is where it had its has its roots. So Louis knew it as a church choir song, and this is the very, very first jazz arrangement of this song ever. So if you wonder where the song came from, it is Louis Armstrong, yep, who played it for the first time, who brought it to popularity, and eventually it became the jazz classic that it is. Eventually such a hoary classic that there's hardly anybody who ever touches it. The song's got hair on it.
So many
people have played it, you know? But the funny thing is, at the time, it was such a radical thing to do that when he came up with it, his sister, Louis Armstrong's sister, Mama Lucy, fussed at him. She goes, what are you doing? You can't be playing that church music, you know, jazzing up that church music. That's not right. And Louis just basically told her to mind her own business with that, because I'm going to play it. And we all know exactly what eventually did happen. This song, be it a church song, it doesn't matter where it came from. What matters is that now it's a jazz standard. Here is the very first jazz version of a traditional song by Louis Armstrong called When the Saints Go Marching In. Who dat?
Sisters and brothers, this is Reverend Satchmo getting ready to beat out this mellow sermon for you. My text this evening is When the Saints Go Marching In. Here come Brother Hickenbottom down the aisle with his trombone. Blow it, boy. Thank you.
All right, I can't help but say that go Saints. Can't help but say it.
And don't feel bad. Don't feel bad about saying it.
I mean, it dates our show specifically if we ever play this on the air again, but so be it. I mean, it's just a remarkable coincidence that we are on the air on February 5th.
I want to feel the love.
2010 as we're airing this, and February 7th is the Super Bowl between the Indianapolis Colts and the New Orleans Saints. So let it go down in history. Whatever does happen, we're having a good time looking forward to what's going to happen on Sunday.
You got to believe.
That's right. Just like they used to say about the Mets. Well, Lewis, Lewis had a lot of fun, obviously, you know, with that version of Saints. And it did take off to become a huge classic. And it occurred to the people at Decca that maybe he could do a couple more things that are gospel related. But Lewis was never really one who had a lot of faith in, say, organized religions per se, especially, you know, he didn't trust preachers. Pretty much. We'll get into that a little bit later on. But so when he decided that he would do a couple of things that were religious in tone, but he wanted to do things that he considered to be more Old Testament based. And I think this was mostly as a tribute to the Karnofsky family, who had helped him out so much when he was a young boy. And he always wore the Star of David around his neck as a means of, like, basically showing true love and gratitude for what they had done for him as a child.
Mm-hmm.
So he records four tracks that are all basically, you could trace them back to Old Testament. Shadrach is one. Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen. Jonah and the Whale is another. And another track called Gonna Shout All Over God's Heaven. Well, what's interesting about that track, although I'm not going to play it, is there's this big chorus in the background that are singing it. And written into the words of this by these white arrangers, they want to make it sound like it's a slave song. And they have all the background chorus, which is a bunch of white people, and they're all singing heaven. Heaven. And then Lewis comes back and he goes, heaven, heaven. It's like he's correcting them, like saying, don't expect me to black myself up while you're going to
dumb myself down.
You're making fools of yourself. Go right ahead. I know how to say the word and I'm going to say it right. So in that series of songs, which included that track, Lewis recorded this song, which is pretty much all story. Not so much. I don't know if he even plays trumpet on it. It's basically just a lot of great words, and it's Lewis having a lot of fun telling the story of Shadrach.
The story of Shadrach.
There was three children from the land of Israel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, who took a trip to the land of Babylon. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babylon. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, he took a lot of gold and made an idol. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and he told everybody when he heard the music of the cornet. And he told everybody when he heard the music of the flute. And he told everybody when he heard the music of the harp. You must fall down and worship the idol Shadrach,
Meshach, Abednego.
But the children of Israel would not bow down Shadrach,
Meshach, Abednego.
Couldn't fool them with a golden idol Shadrach,
Meshach, Abednego.
I said you couldn't fool them with a golden idol, Shadrach,
Meshach, Abednego. Oh, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
So the king put the children in the fiery furnace, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Heaped on cold and red hot brimstone, Shadrach,
Meshach, Abednego.
Seven times hotter than it ought to be, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Burn up the soldiers that the king had put there, Shadrach,
Meshach, Abednego.
But the Lord sent an angel with the snowy white wings down in the middle of the furnace, talking to the children about the power of the gospel, Shadrach,
Meshach, Abednego.
Well, they couldn't even burn a hair on the hater, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, laughing and talking while the fire jumping around. Old Nebuchadnezzar called, hey there, when he saw the power of the Lord, and they had a big time in the house of Babylon.
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
Ho, 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 Abednego.
That's what I'm talking about. Louis Armstrong proven that he's got away with the story and pulling a song off in such a way that it's pretty much, it's his. He owns it. But the best is yet to come. I mean, his biggest hit in the year, actually, we're now up to the year 19. Well, this track was actually his biggest hit in 1929 when he originally recorded it. And he comes back to revisit it again here in June of 1938. And again, although we're talking about how his critics have been on his case, there's an awful lot of critics that are singling out specific performances of his genius where they can't help but rave about it. And I'm noticing that what it comes down to is this. Around this time, all of these songs were released on 78 RPM records. So you would get really two tracks, whatever you bought. Mm-hmm. And if you spent your money on these things, you can be sure you were playing them a lot. And you'd begin to become familiar with them. And familiarity, especially if it's a song that you truly care for, is going to make you love it more and more and more. You're going to begin to embody the song almost. So the critics who are really listening are falling in love with it. It's the ones who are basically just looking at it at an overview who might be having attitude. But regarding this track, this time we're talking about a French critic by the name of André Hodier, or however you say his last name, we'll just say that. He writes an analysis, and this is what he has to say about this song. It is, quote, the most beautiful Armstrong solo ever recorded, but also one of the most successful feats in the history of jazz. I guess he's one for overspeaking, or there's something really special about the way that Lewis plays this track. Here it is, the 1938 version of I Can't Give You Anything But Love.
Boys, I forget some of the words. That's on it. Well, yeah, we tried. After all these years. Oh, I can't give you anything but love. Baby, that's the only thing I've plenty of. Baby, dream wild. Scheme wild, you should find all the happiness, and I guess all those things that you have cried for, baby. Gee, I'd like to see you looking swell, babe. Baby, diamond bracelets, worldwide doesn't sell. Oh, baby, baby, baby. Till that lucky day, you know darn well, baby, I can't give you anything, love.
Same track we played a number of shows earlier. It's the 1938 version, showing that Lewis is able to take his older material, which he was doing a lot of around this time, going through his backlog and re-recording a lot of those songs again, updating them with like swing versions, big band arrangements of some mm-hmm. of his earlier stuff. I wouldn't say that any of it suffered from his redoing. In fact, some of the song, the re-recordings are just out downright beautiful, as was that version of that song, I Can't Give You Anything But Love. Now, this being said, the next thing I'm going to play is either a bit of a treat or maybe a bit of a trouble, depending on your perspective. I would say it's probably not necessarily a classic recording of Louis Armstrong's, but it's phenomenally interesting, and we're going to play it in light of an incident that had happened in Louis's life that I want to read to you in more or less excerpting from jumping around from various parts of the Lawrence Berggren book called Louis Armstrong, An Extravagant Life. This is regarding Joe Oliver, Louis Armstrong's hero.
Uh-huh.
Of course, the person who
King
pretty
Oliver.
Much, King Oliver, the man who Joe had it pretty much, I can't say that he taught Louis to play, but had it not been for Joe Oliver, Louis Armstrong would not have had a career, plain and simple. Louis Armstrong would never have left New Orleans, period. The only reason Louis left is because it was Joe who said, I got a spot for you up here in Chicago if you want to come up and play. And everything that happened to Louis's life more or less can be traced back to what Joe Oliver did for Louis as a young man and child. So anyway, Joe had returned to the South after Louis had become famous. And this is from the book now. His decision to remain in the South led to one miserable experience after another. His old tour bus broke down and he missed many gigs. When he managed to get the bus running again, it was badly damaged in an accident. And by the time he could pay for repairs, his gums were so bad he couldn't play his horn.
Oh, dear.
Got really bad. And what really happened was said is Louis started to go on tour in the South. And he bumped into Joe, seeing him this far down on his luck. And Louis could barely believe his eyes. So Louis gave Joe all the money in his pockets, $150 or so, and told him to go buy himself a new suit of clothes. And he took up a collection among the other members of the band to do for all Joe's sake. That night, they played a dance. Joe Oliver showed up and stood in the wings. And this is Louis's quote. He was as sharp like the old Joe Oliver in 1915. He'd been to the pawn shop and gotten his suits and all. Stetson hat turned down, high button shoes, his box back coat. He looked beautiful and he had a wonderful night just listening to us. The next day, Louis and the band resumed their tour. Unfortunately, Joe Oliver was left behind to fend for himself. And things just got worse and worse for him. He did occasionally get a few gigs, but only in small towns because he was afraid to play in the big cities where he was known because he didn't want to compete with his own reputation.
Mm.
Things got so bad that he actually wrote a letter to his sister. And in his notes there, he wrote, quote, I'm not the one to give up quick. I always feel like I've got a chance. I still feel like I'm going to snap out of the rut I've been in for several years. He found a dentist, tried to get himself fitted for false teeth. But then he wrote his sister, I've started a little dime bank saving. I got $1.60 in it, and I won't touch it. I'm going to try and save myself a ticket to New York. But then he was working at pushing a push cart. That was his job. And it got to be too strenuous for him as he was getting older. Mm-hmm. So he eventually gets a job as an attendant at a pool hall, closing it up at midnight. The manager, a woman named Connie Wimberly, remembers telling him, go ahead and do what you can. Sweep up now and then, and I'll give you something when I can. She had no idea that Joe had ever been the king of anything.
Sadness.
As it turns out, of course, as much as he tried to come back, he finally wrote to his sister, I may never see New York again in my life. Don't think I am afraid. I'm trying to live nearer to the Lord than ever before. So I feel like the good Lord will take care of me. 2 months later, on Sunday, April 10th, Joe Oliver died in his room. Now, Louis always believed that his teacher, mentor, and father figure died of a broken heart. The medical cause, according to the death certificate, was a cerebral hemorrhage aggravated by arteriosclerosis. He was only 52 years old when he died. His sister paid for his remains to be shipped up north to New York in a very cheap box, according to the undertaker, for his funeral. In New York, the Amsterdam News took note of his passing, describing the funeral he received in New York, where a leading minister, Adam Clayton Powell Jr., officiated, and Louis himself played the trumpet in a program underwritten by the Negro Actors Guild. But this is where Louis had an attitude about it. Louis was very offended by Adam Clayton Powell in particular and by the way that the Negro Actors Guild had handled this. This is Louis's words. It would have been nice if they'd had a parade for him, Louis said. But instead, they took him into the chapel across from the Lafayette, that big rehearsal hall in Harlem. I didn't like the sermon the preacher Adam Clayton Powell Jr. gave at all. Apparently, Reverend Powell took the occasion to moralize about all the money Joe Oliver had squandered in his lifetime, which infuriated Louis. Just because the guild buried him was no reason for rubbing it in, he complained. The guild isn't supposed to say that. That's what we donate our services for when they give benefits. Never fond of the clergy, Lewis considered ministers to be con artists and bullies who used the prestige of the pulpit to fleece their followers. Lewis was keeping this in mind when he decided to go into the studio. He had something in mind that he remembered back from when he was a kid, or a young man anyway. Bert Williams was one of Lewis's original heroes, and Bert Williams had recorded a spoken word piece about a selfish, greedy minister who was trying to finagle money out of the people. Of his ministry. Lewis knew it by heart, so he went into the studio and he recorded a version of this to be released on a 12-inch 78. Very uncommon and weird for Lewis to be doing something like this. And I don't know if you're going to want to hear the whole thing, but I think you should definitely hear Lewis as he lets his attitude about this build up. And he does his own version of this track, which is called Elder Eatmore's Sermon on Generosity.
I take my text today from the book of Ephesians. The Lord loveth a cheerful giver. Tonight, my friends, you can omit the cheerful. The truth is life, and here is the truth. You all is way back in my salary, and something has got to be done here this evening, because if something ain't done, your shepherd is gone. That's all. That is all. I admit that times is tight, because when there used to be a ham coming here and a fowl or two from there from members of this flock, I managed to make out fair to middling. They all comes to he who waits, but you all done like me that self-preservation is the first law of he who gets it, and the Lord helps they that helps theirselves. Everything's got so scientifical nowadays that they don't commence building such things as smokehouses and hen houses out of pure concrete. And they's invented locks for 'em. The same as the combination on the First National Bank.
True, true.
That makes it harder for all of us and pretty near ruined me and my friends. I need. Ain't no use talking about what I need. I need everything. From my hat down and from my overcoat in. Nah, ain't no use getting restless there, brother. Now, because here is the program. We ain't going past no plate this evening. You all is coming up one at a time and drop your offerings on the table here while I shall look down from the altar here with an eagle eye. We will start with the first row. Come, my lambs. Your shepherd calls unto you, saying, give unto me that I may eat of the bread of life, so that when that great day comes, you can meet me in judgment and shake my hands with a clear conscience.
There you go. I think you get a pretty clear idea of exactly Lewis combining a little bit of anger with his humor on his version of that track. I think it's interesting just to hear exactly how incredible the passing of the torch is on this, that I would just play a little bit of the very, very old original recording dating back to 1915, as I said, because I think it's telling to hear the original version by Bert Williams. We'll not play that again. We'll only play a little bit of it so you can hear exactly where Lewis was getting this from. So here's the original recording of Elder Eatmore's Sermon on Generosity as recorded by Bert Williams in 1915.
I picked my text this evening from the book of Ephesians. The Lord loveth a cheerful giver. Tonight, my friends, you can omit the cheerful. The truth is the light. And here it is. You're all is way back in my salary. Something's got to be done this evening, or else you all gonna lose your shepherd. That's all. That is all. I admit that times is tight. Because when there used to be a ham coming here and a fowl or two from there from different members of the flock, I managed to make out fair to the middle of it. They they all come to he who waits, but you all done learned me that self-preservation is the first law of he who gets it. And the Lord helps them that helps themselves. True. Everything's got so scientifical nowadays, it's done commenced.
There you go. Just to get a piece of it, it's pretty incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, he's very true to the original.
Yeah, just from a historic perspective, I think
I can only imagine him as a young man or a child listening to this record, the original recording, over and over again to the point to where he like pretty much remembers it all.
Well, Burt Williams is one of those old vaudeville performers that actually I think the value of what he had recorded remains valid even to this day. If you go back, he's the guy who originally did that song Nobody.
Oh, yeah, that's a classic.
You know, nobody. You know, who was there that pulled the engine off my neck after I was in that railroad wreck? You know, I ain't never got nothing from nobody.
And until I get something
from somebody sometime, you know, without a doubt, I ain't going to do nothing for nobody no time. That was Burt Williams. And, of course, you know, to think that song, that's a good he's a guy that's worth checking out, and he had a huge influence on Lewis. So I just figured it would be a good time to bring that up. Now, our next track is, getting back to the music, is a song called What Is This Thing Called Swing? Now, if anybody knew what this thing called swing is, obviously it's Louis Armstrong. But it's very interesting. The reason I mention this is because it's hard to believe this, but from today's perspective especially, but by the mid-30s, jazz as an art form was dead. People considered it to be absolutely gone, an anachronism, something that was looking backward. Jazz existed in the 20s. By 1938, if you said you played jazz, what that meant was you were playing really bad arrangements of old jazz recordings that are being written down, sort of like what Dixieland became.
Mm-hmm.
So the word jazz had that sort of a connotation about it in 1938. So nobody was calling themselves jazz players for a stretch of time there. Of course, eventually, it would come around and come back. As soon as you had, you know, the cool players, it was okay to call it jazz again because you could say it's cool jazz. But there was nothing cool about jazz in the late 30s. So everything became swing. If you were going to be hip, you had to call what you were doing swing, not jazz.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the bands were about. They were swing bands. It was a swing scene. Music was swinging. It wasn't jazz. It was swinging. And that's exactly what Lewis is talking about on this track when he sings, "What is this thing called swing?"
Cats were swinging like you never heard before. Each one took a solo and the people cried for more. All at once the leader stopped and hollered to the band, "Boys, I like your playing, but I just don't understand. What is this thing called swing? What is this thing called swing? Is it jazz or track time, futuristic ragtime? What is this thing called swing? Now if swing's the thing you talk about, I'ma have the boys to beat it out. First of all, our saxophones gonna rattle off some mellow tones. Let's get together, boys. Now, folks, don't get too hot, 'cause that rhythm section's coming up, and they're really on the spot. Get a load of these cats. Yes, sir. Thank you. Now, when Gable starts his jamboree, he's got to blow six brass for me. Get your chops together, boys. I'm coming over there after you. Yes, sir.
Take your heart, boy, beat it out. Show the world what swing's about.
How you like that? Them cats telling me to beat it out? Why you didn't let me get this on up to mama? Wait a minute.
All right, Louis Armstrong making very plain what this thing called swing is. Great track called What Is This Thing Called Swing? Good time as any for me to recap and let you know that you are listening to the Friday edition of American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM. We call the show How Music Changed on Fridays, and we look at some of the most important and influential aspects of musical culture from the past 100 years or so. And we are dedicating a good chunk of our shows right now to Mr. Louis Armstrong, a man who deserves every minute that we could possibly offer to him for all the things that he's offered. I really hope you're enjoying this series. If you are and you want to hear the whole thing in its entirety, you can. You can visit us at our website, which is our archive site where we're saving everything. That is at Shad Up and Listen. SHADDUPANDLISTEN.com. Shad Up like Brooklyn, like the way Lewis would say it, probably. SHADDUP.
Shad Up.
Right.
And Listen.
And Listen. Very simple. .com. All 13 shows. 12 of them are posted there now. This show will be posted there as soon as we finish it and get it up live this evening. And you can hear the series, one that I'm very proud of, because I have a lot of respect for Louis, and I hope it shows in our programs. Well, let's get back to what we're doing. All the way up to 1939, now December of, around 1940, March of 1940 will be our next track. But in the interim, before we get to that song, that track, some interesting aspects of Louis's personal life began to change. Finally, on September 30th, 1938, he got divorced from his second wife, Lil. Lil just did not let go. I mean, their marriage had, at this point had been pretty much...
They weren't living together for a long time.
It's been like 10 years, really. It's been about 10 years. They'd bump into each other. They were married, but Lil just really didn't want to let go. And they had anything but a conventional marriage. Louis had been living with Alpha. For the majority of those past 10 years and traveling around the country with them. In fact, everybody in Europe was calling her Mrs. Armstrong, and they just let it stand. So I guess it was a matter of like a little, it's complicated. They had respect for each other, but they really obviously were not a conventional married couple by any means, by any definition of the word. So finally, by 1938, September 30th, actually, the divorce became final. They had gone their separate ways, which then meant that Alpha was ready to move in to become Louis's third wife. And no time was wasted. On October 11th of 1938, not even 2 weeks after the divorce, while they're on tour in Houston, Louis and Alpha get married. And what's unfortunate about it is that at this point, the bloom is already off of the rose between Louis and Alpha.
Oopsie.
It's becoming very plain to Louis at this point that Alpha is pretty much there to see, to take what Louis can give her. She wants the cars, the coats, the clothing, and the lifestyle and everything. And Louis is marrying her because she was with him all this time, sort of like almost out of obligation. But you can tell that in his heart, that his heart wasn't in it, as he had explained it going back at it. When he looks at it in retrospective, it seems as if maybe... he just felt like maybe she might have even had a spell over him at this point, because she was just holding on to him, and he just stuck with what his situation was. So he married her basically to make it legitimate after all that time. Maybe it was this, the name of this song from March 14th, recorded March 14th, 1940. This is Louis Armstrong singing, "You've Got Me Voodooed."
Just like some magic potion, you fill me with emotion. You control my very soul. You've got me voodooed. You knew the goddess Venus would start this love between us. You inspired me with desire. You've got me voodooed. You knew you had the power and even picked the hour when the full moon was up above. I was hypnotized when I looked into your eyes. My heart was filled with love. Just like the siren Circe, you've got me at your mercy. Always yours to have and hold. Mama, you've got me voodoo. Thank you.
that's called You Got Me Voodooed. As Louis Armstrong definitely has me voodooed. I'm totally under this man's spell. And the more I listen and the more that I learn, the more I love it. I hope that you can agree with me, too, as you're following us through this series, as we cover some of the highlights. And I do literally mean that when I say some of the highlights of the music of his life. Because even with 13 shows being under our belt so far, time limitations, you know, forced me to take tremendous jumps from track to track just to try to keep the story moving. And in a way,
right, you can't play every one of them.
No, it would be playing Louis Armstrong as long as we covered Motown. We'd be here for 69 shows, maybe more. So I don't want to do that. I just want to keep it tight and focused to convey what we can. But that track was recorded on March 14th, 1940, and it was a heck of a day because I've got three songs that I want to play from that one day. It's significant, not just because Louis was so hot on this one day and his playing was so great, that is the reason I'm playing these songs, is because they're such great examples of what Louis was able to do. It also so happens that this was actually the very last recording date that Louis had done with his full band. After this, times were going to change, and as you'll see when we come back with show number 14 next week. But the people who are in his band now, who will be out of it by the time the session, you know, within a year of this session, includes Henry Red Allen, the other trumpet player. The poor guy had virtually nothing to do when Louis played, and he's a great trumpet player. He's a great trumpet player on his own. But Henry Red Allen would be out of the band. J.C. Higginbottom, the trombone player who you always hear Louis talking about, Higgy,
right.
He's out of the band. Charlie Holmes, the alto saxophone player, would be gone. Bingle Madison, the tenor saxophone player, would be gone. Lee Blair, guitar, would be out of the band. And even Pops Foster,
wow,
the bass player, would be out. Now, Louis's original drummer, Barburn, who was the New Orleans Cat, he's already gone from the band. And all of the drummer on these tracks, which actually is one of the reasons why they sound so great, is the new drummer who comes in. Sid Catlett becomes Louis's new drummer, kind of becomes Louis's drummer for life, in a sense. He was Louis's favorite drummer in the world. And I think you're going to be able to get some indication of why Louis thought so much of him as you listen to these next two tracks. This one happens to be called Harlem Stomp.
Tell me up Harlem way, they got a brand new sender, and I believe it's in the groove. It's got the jitterbugs all swinging, hip chicks old and tender, and they believe it's in the groove. Now here's a dance that's something new, folks uptown taught me to do, called the Harlem Stomp, the Harlem Stomp. Like a storm and cyclone mad, it swept around this dizzy fad. That's that Harlem Stomp. I say it, Harlem Stomp. Now it's composed of every dance from 1902. Young and old came up and pranced to one step Shag and Sousa Q. Every night at the old Savoy, you hear him swing a Floyd Doy. You jump right up and romp and do that Harlem Stomp. Thank you.
Sid Catlett replacing Paul Barbarin on that track. And Paul's a great drummer. There's plenty of historical references to that, but you can definitely hear where Sid is kind of propelling Lewis. That's obviously quite the masterpiece, showing that Louis Armstrong was still absolutely 100% at the top of his game as the 1940s began. And if that wasn't good enough for you, we probably have an even bigger masterpiece to end our set. This track, again, recorded the exact same day. I think it was the very next song recorded.
They were hot.
That session ended. Okay, let's pick up the next track. It's written by another artist who we had already covered in our How Music Changed series, Jelly Roll Morton. Mm-hmm. We've done a number of shows on Jelly Roll. And he wrote this song. He called it The Wolverines, his version. So back then, when songs got published, it was common to put the word blues on the end because back then the blues were fashionable. Whether
right.
the song was blues or not, it didn't matter. So as Louis Armstrong recorded it, that's what happened here. The song came out released as Wolverine Blues. And I think this stands as one of the finest recordings that Louis Armstrong ever did. Now, all those other critics are talking about all those other tracks, and there's maybe a lot of the songs.
And now you're going to talk about it.
Exactly. Maybe they've all got their own reasoning for saying this or that, and I'd say maybe they're all classics, but this is one that I would pick. We'll end our show with this track by Louis Armstrong and his orchestra, The Wolverine Blues. Take care, everybody. Look forward to seeing you next week. Go Saints.
Who dat?
Take care, everybody.
Sorry, Chad.
See you then. Bye-bye, everyone.